So Adam, I would like you to say something about collaboration. What is what does collaboration, what role does it play in your art, like artwork? How does it connect for you in the, you know, overall like bio art connection between bio art and collaboration?
Well, okay, so listen, the first thing that I would say is my major collaborators are not human. And if they are human, I'm trying to turn them into something or someone, or to birth a non-human. My major collaborators are life, the life world. Sometimes that's collaboration, and sometimes that's just usury, and trying to distinguish the difference. Yeah? Trying to distinguish the difference between collaboration and usury is difficult in bioart, because bioartists use life. They call themselves designers sometimes. They call themselves do-it-yourself citizen scientists. They don't usually call themselves like life users as artists. To be able to distinguish between using and working with life is sometimes difficult, because you can't totally ask a life form, would you like to work with me on this project? I'm thinking of mutating your genome. Who knows? Your descendants might be worthy of a museum. I don't think most fungi or insects or fish or human embryos really have a decent response to that kind of question. Would you trade one genome trajectory for some graffiti artist's signature fame induced heavy-handedness in making your genome have a different trajectory, in the name of being put on a pedestal in a shitty bell jar for a crappy installation that looks like it could just be a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? It might be better bio art. So sometimes I work with organisms as opposed to working with organisms. When you work with an organism, you do something like play frisbee with your dog, right? You do something like painting with elephants or dancing with wolves. When you work with an organism, sometimes you give your art to the organism. Now, this would be like non-human enrichment art, sometimes referred to as trans-species art, where people make like a bridge over the freeway for live animals to be able to cross the freeway without getting hit by cars. That's sort of like in the line with preserving keystone species and kind of deep ecology. If you make games for pets, like you know, a popular corporate store might make just pet toys. That's an award-winning, you know, economically feasible thing, because pets are bored suburbanite animals and they need entertainment. Well, so do other animals that are in captivity, right? And this includes animals in zoos, animals stuck in parks, because parks are actually like similar to our human zoos. We have non-human zoos. They're called parks. Maybe even humans as animals that are stuck kind of in captivity in suburbia need enrichment. You know, that's why we have these cell phones. That's why we have the Netflix palette. That's why we have endless cereals right now, is because there's really nothing else to do. We're kind of in jail, in the jail of our own making. And certainly people in jail and in refugee camps need animal enrichment, because A, humans are animals, and B, they are being treated like animals. So I saw, actually, I went to Basel, not for Art Basel, but for something called Black Box, and it was actually making art with refugees that were in a refugee camp just over the border in Basel, and they were being kept in the jail. But during the day, everyone that was there as a refugee was let out of the jail into the park for a couple of hours, maybe in between meals, right?
I think I saw it.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful program, And I tried to do some collaboration. I was talking about enriching animals, so I put a speaker. I started to dig a hole in the earth to put a speaker in to talk to the land. But it turned out that none of the refugees were allowed to work. So they would release them out into Switzerland with no money and no chance at work. And so mostly this residency was providing tea and coffee and sometimes like things to sit on and some soccer balls or something. And some artists would come and try to spice it up a little bit. Turned out that everybody wanted to dig the hole. Nobody, you know, they were like, you're an artist, you know how to dig a hole. We got the hole and the speaker got put in the ground and people took the microphone and they started, everybody had something else to say. You know, they might talk to the Swiss and they might talk to Europe, or they might sing, you know, an Eritrean song or some kind of Tibetan thing. And almost we had to set up a sort of shade for people because it was too sunny. And then it started looking like a funeral, you know, and it kind of got deep. Not my intention, but it got deep. So there's that sort of collaboration. Also, eco art is often in collaboration with the earth or in collaboration with natural forces. Maybe not that naive. Sometimes like a spiral jetty, it's actually dressing up a super fun site with something that says, you know, we could have had a lot more fun than this. So it's not always just peachy eco art. Sometimes eco art has got a hard edge. A tactical edge. But the other arts that involve life, arts that involve food, arts that involve biology, they're a little more heavy-handed. And I guess the arts that use the human body, like performance art, they're actually almost also thoughtful, because at least if you're going to hurt yourself or your friends, at least you're doing it with their permission, as opposed to, I would say, bio art and food art really suck for collaboration. Like I would, if someone said, do you want to be in a bio art piece or a food art piece where you are the biology or you are the food, I would have to think hard and ask really a lot of questions before I wanted to be the life in someone else's art that way, because bio art on the whole is pretty much using life as a medium in total usury. Like instead of playing frisbee with your dog, you would cut your dog's head off and make monoprints with its neck, right? And be like, look at the art I made with this dog. That's a different kind of width, right? So when I look at, say, tissue culture art or transgenic art or art that uses experimental laboratory methods, it's generally like science. It's a one-way street towards death if you enter into that wager, right? Now, a lot of people are using yeast or E. coli, or plants. For instance, I have some plants right here, these little ones here. Those are GMO plants. They're not supposed to be outside. Indeed, if they were outside, which they're not, they're on my porch, it's different. They're double contained.
Which is enclosed with glass.
Oh yeah, they're enclosed with glass and my words. I'm containing them with my words. Stay. Stay. That's double containment, so we're safe. But in general, if I wanted to take them outside, I'd either need a permit or I'd need to kill them to take them outside.
What kind of GMOs are they?
Oh, they're fucked up. I mean, they were mustard plants. It's called Arabidopsis thaliana. It's a standard workhorse of molecular biology. It was the first plant to be sequenced. It's a precursor, because it grows so fast and makes so many seeds, it's a precursor to working with, say, rice or corn or sorghum, these sort of grains that people, and also big crops like palm oil trees and things like that. But these plants have been whole genome reprogrammed in two directions at once. I call them bipolar. Their gene expression patterns, like their genes remain the same as what was contained in their genome before, but in over 500 places on their genome, the expression patterns have been changed. Upregulated, downregulated, which means like, you know, if I say milk to you and you hear the word milk, and you're kind of a sensitive person when it comes to language, you may actually begin to produce something like lactic acid to digest milk. So anyway, these plants are officially, we are not sure if they are still plants, because some of the places that the alteration for up and down regulated landed may have turned on or turned off or overexpressed or underexpressed genes that haven't been, well, some genes that may have been expressed that haven't been expressed in millions of years. They've been laying dormant, atavistically strained inside of like some sort of compartmentalized, maybe in case of emergency, break glass here genes. And if one of these upregulators lands right before that gene, well, it may be from back when it was a protozoa, not a plant. It may be some kind of gene that hasn't been used in any other organism except lizards. So this plant may be part protozoa lizard at this point. I'm not sure. But it's a little late to ask the seeds if they would have liked to collaborate, right? they're bound for the pedestal.
It's almost like the multi-species is already in that plant, and you're kind of communicating with that.
Uh-huh, drawing it out, yeah. Well, yeah, there is a question. Maybe I'm just a zoophiliac, right?